That would be wonderful. And
sure, I'll commit to getting you that.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. Okay, Anstris Farwell. You're on mute, Anstris.
This is Anstris. I dropped a link in the chat. You can look at Environment and Human Health has a very developed website about the impacts of artificial turf fields. The head of that, Nancy Alderman, and I actually tried to convince Yale not to install these fields because of their multiple environmental impacts and their health impacts. It's well known that there's more injuries to athletes that play on the fields and more problems with people becoming heat stressed. So it's actually interesting that Yale didn't want to mention those two prime causes.
Right. Okay, well, we will talk about artificial turf fields. In fact, the Environmental Advisory Council is going to request a public hearing about that, but that's not the topic right now. We're talking about water. But thank you. That is very important. And yes, the relationship between the artificial turf fields and all the water they use is very important for all of us. Okay. Kathy, I think you were next, and then Iris. You're on mute again, Anstris.
Yeah. I didn't finish.
Okay. Go ahead.
And that is, to go to the equity issue. Mr. Mongillo said that he was, certain that they had addressed this properly. But I think that not only water conservation, but if small users and people that struggle to even pay their water bill are in a sense subsidizing the larger user, and that's a major equity issue. So yes. I just go with that.
Thank you. Okay, Kathy.
I just wanted to point out that it doesn't really matter whether we're in drought conditions or not in terms of needing to emphasize water conservation. So if the reservoirs are full and we can manage to keep them full, that's great. There's just should be no relationship at all between those two things. It doesn't matter that the Northeast usually gets plenty of rain because just the cost, there's other costs involved with getting water out to customers. And all of those costs are reflected in what we pay. I just thought that was a bit of a fallacious argument to say that, we had full reservoirs. This is water conservation should be an ongoing commitment.
Thank you. Anyone want to respond to that?
I would just very briefly say that I completely understand where you're coming from, but as the consumer advocate, I also have to be concerned about rates. And, I became consumer affairs officer in 2008. And every rate application for the last 14 years, we've had a bad economy. Connecticut really hasn't recovered from the 2008 recession. And if the Regional Water Authority doesn't sell water, its fixed costs, its capital costs, its O&M costs do not go away. And, there's already a decline in consumption that is traced back almost to the late 90s that has resulted in rate increases to fund capital costs and maintain infrastructure. So there does need to be some water sales to support the capital costs. And quite frankly, there's been multiple studies of what the right size capital program is. And the capital program was downsized about a decade ago to try to control rate increases. So, you know, it's important conservation and good stewardship and, you know, the environmental mission of the authority are certainly of paramount importance. But from a consumer perspective, we want water to be affordable as well. So we do have to balance those interests. I don't think they're competing interests. I don't think they're inconsistent interests. I just think, you know, when we've got the ability, you know, we're very fortunate. We really are. We're very fortunate in the New Haven district, even in comparison to other parts of Connecticut, in terms of the reservoirs and the water capacity that we have. I just wish if there was a way that we could get our water to other parts of the state, you know, that we could, you know, distribute and help other parts of the state that rely less on reservoir and more on groundwater, we'd be in a better position. But I do think that, you know, it's important to keep in mind that there's also an affordability factor.
Okay. Well, I must say New Haven's going through a building boom. So we're going to have a lot more residents paying for water very soon because there are, I think, 800 new units going up in my neighborhood alone. So I don't think you need to worry about that. And anyway, I'm going to Iris, then Jim, then Lou. Iris.
Yes. So I would be also interested in getting the report on the water rates if you guys don't have more information. If we're having increasing blocks or decreasing blocks, I would be interested. And also, if we could get communications about the public hearing, or if we could get somebody who is local to inform us about when these public hearings are occurring. And lastly, if we could just get information maybe from Steve Vitko, just what are the levels of the reservoirs right now? Did the last rain, what are we, are we still in drought? I know we're technically in our area D2 drought.
Right now, our area is in, well, I can't say what it is right now after the storm that we received, but we'll talk about prior to the storm. We were at stage 2 drought, where a couple counties in the state were at stage 3 drought. Our reservoir status is exactly consistent as of August 31st with our long-term average. So meaning that's our historical average is 74%. At the end of August, we were at 74%. So even though we were calling for a voluntary reduction in 10%, that was just us getting proactive on the fact that, yes, it's getting a bit drier, even though our reservoirs are consistent with the historic factors. We still want to conserve just in case that rain doesn't come in the future. So we want to make sure we have as much water stored in our reservoirs right now as possible in order to justify potentially not having storms in the future. Now, as I believe Steve Mangello alluded to before this, we rely on more of the winter months to fill up our sources. So it's very common right now through the summer for our sources to dwindle in total volume and storage supply. And then it's very common on the other side to receive precipitation and through, you know, snowfall and rainfall during the winter months, which will allow us to elevate that storage capacity once again. And you think about it too, where in the winter, there's no leaves on trees. You know, the ground is pretty, it's pretty solid, and there's no, uptake of water and nutrients from trees. So you're getting a lot more of that runoff into the reservoirs as well. But to answer your question, simply put, we were at long-term average at the end of August, so August 31st, I believe it was. And now this storm, we're actually spilling. A lot of our reservoirs that were, let's say, minus 1 or 2 feet because of the impending drought, after that storm, we're now spilling at almost a foot at some of the reservoirs. So we're certainly well equipped with water right now.
Yeah, so, okay, thank you. Yeah, so Laura, I guess just for the city, I'm just trying to think out loud, is we have large consumers like Yale that is irrigating plastic, and I'm just trying to think what tools we could use. I mean, Yale is one entity, but in general, if we could use more educational tools that RWA has access to, including reducing using any garden gas powered tools, and just in general, just encouraging people to have less lawn and more hardy plants in their yards. And New Haven is small, and we don't have many large mansions. I don't know if it's a big problem. I don't even know if irrigation here is a big problem.
Would you mind if I chimed in on a couple of things for that?
Sure.
First off, RWA has actually, in the past couple of years, have put in pollinator gardens of our own throughout our, at our main campus at 90 Sargent Drive here in New Haven, and also throughout a few of our land holdings in Hamden and I believe a couple other towns. So we also have committed to many public outreach concepts, and as well as what are they called, webinar series that promote good irrigation practices and planting of native species and reducing the lawn that requires much watering. So for that, we're certainly well covered, and we certainly have been trying to get the word out to the best of our ability on that. In terms of the athletic turf fields, we really can't provide any other comments on that. We can't jurisdict what Yale installs at their athletic facilities. The only thing we do is supply them with water. We can't jurisdict how much water, how when they're watering, anything in terms of that. So really, RWA is totally 100% disconnected from any athletic facilities that Yale has. We just simply supply them the water.
Or is muted.
There was a dog barking. I'm sorry. Just to be fair to Yale, their SCSU also has at least one artificial turf field, and so does the city of New Haven for high school ball. Anyway, we will go on. Jim Stacy and then Lou Rosado Birch.
Yeah, I guess looking at it long-term versus short-term, we all have to keep aware of climate change and the effects. And as, you know, warmer temperatures move north, we're now in a different growing, so forth, that this emphasis on water conservation needs to be in the fore. We're not really saying here that you shouldn't charge for stuff, okay? You do have to cover the fixed costs, although perhaps some of the fixed costs now are antiquated in terms of longer term planning, but we don't want to get into that at time here. You're talking, Jeff, about needing to have it affordable, and certainly having the inverse block structure would make it more affordable for the people on the lower end of the spectrum there. So I'd like to see us move away from something. Whatever Ernst & Young says, it's clear from the people that have been working in water conservation for over 50 years that this idea of more water, less fees is not the way to go. And so maybe you should pick another consultant to work with.
I don't pick the consultants. So,
what?
I don't pick the consultants. I'm not a Water Authority employee.
Steve,
but
maybe
you brought it up.
Right. Well, okay.
So this isn't something that I can comment on because this is certainly not within my realm at the Regional Water Authority.
Okay, I understand, but perhaps you and Catherine and Naomi could bring this up, the suggestion that a real water conservation consultant be hired to help. So
there's certainly a real environmental consultant, and in terms of what they do, they're certainly 100% qualified to do that work. We're like Jeff alluded to before, we're happy to share the report with you, and we'll keep it at that for now. But you know, if you have any other questions going forward, we certainly can bring it to the to the people who are responsible for it.
Thank you,
Laura, and I too will. Your points are well taken, and we will take them back and consider them not only with the board but also with management. So, thank you for your points.
And if I could get a copy of that report that Steve mentioned, I would appreciate it.
Report, you know, Jeff D'Onofrio has offered to provide that report. As it's Steve, we will make sure that the report gets provided to the the
committee
council. Okay.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you very much, Catherine.
Great.
Okay.
Laura, this is Steve Mongello. If I could say a couple of things quickly, just to address Kathy's concerns. I was just stating sort of the circumstances. I didn't mean to imply that we should waste water. We're very fortunate in this part of the country not to, to have the issues that other parts do. But a couple of points that Jeff made are really critical. The draft or the amount of water that's being sold has been on the decline for more than 10 years. And this is what the Water Authority has to sell in order to support its infrastructure. So it's always a balance of the water use. And as Steve said, you don't always control what people do with it. It's our obligation to provide it, provide quality water. So, a lot of these large organizations like Yale have been taking considerable efforts to reduce their overall water consumption. I'm kind of surprised to hear about this use because of that going on in general. And that's all contributed to less and less water being used on a yearly basis as well. So that's also part of the picture. It's a very complex subject, actually.
Okay. I know it is. I just, Yale's always touting its sustainability. And I saw one very, very dry Saturday several weeks ago, sprinklers running on the Yale athletic fields all day long from 9:30 in the morning to 5 at night. Not all the sprinklers all the time. And they might have started before 9:30. I didn't see them till then. But it sets a bad example. That's what I will say. Okay.
Or I'll chime in just really quick on this subject. I don't want to drag this out, but so I've had discussions with other athletic facilities that are on Regional Water Authority's watershed areas. At that point we could enter the properties due to the fact for DPH regulations. And they've told me that they do start, they're very well aware with the best management practices for irrigation. They actually start the program at the time that is recommended. So let's say 3-4 a.m. However, there's so many zones that need to be used to water these fields that a lot of times they span all the way into 9, 10, 11 a.m. Because of the fact that there's such large areas. So sometimes it's not the lack of knowledge, but it could also be the infrastructure in place.
Okay. I get that. It was till 5 in the evening that day. And the field hockey field, they don't just water it in the morning. They water it any time of the day before the girls are playing. Okay, Lou Rosado Birch.
Let's be totally blunt here, right? I mean, Yale also houses some of the most cutting-edge research that's going on the issue of crumb rubber and potential impacts to human health. So the fact that they're now installing a field, shows that they may perhaps, one hand's not talking to the other. That's totally besides the point. Real quick question first, and you have to forgive me because I did sign on a few minutes late. Mr. D'Onofrio, what is your position again and your representation?
Office of Consumer Affairs. I'm an outside lawyer. I practice in North Haven, and I get involved in rate cases, applications for projects in excess of $2 million, acquisition.
Are you the official consumer advocate for RWA?
Yes. Yes.
Thank you. And then the same question to Mr. Mongello, and I'll make my point.
I'm the Hamden representative. I'm on the policy board. I don't know if you heard before, among our functions are to approve rate increases, land disposition issues, and all of the projects that Jeff was alluding to, over $2 million. We also review the budget with the Water Authority. And we have some subcommittees. I happen to be chairman of the Consumer Affairs Subcommittee. So if consumer issues don't get resolved within the authority, they get escalated to our committee to review also.
That's helpful. I apologize for making you go through all that again. So I think the main point I want to make is, and we obviously appreciate you all coming to have this conversation with us, the ratepayers. So, you know, to your point a few minutes ago, there's a lot of moving parts to this issue. And yes, there needs to be a balance. But part of the policy also needs to be driven by data and by science. And to be clear, I think it's an oversimplification to say that we are not having the same type of climate change impacts that we're seeing in other parts of the country, because one of the things that the findings of the Water Planning Council, when they put together the state water plan, is that, yes, in fact, we are seeing significant climate impacts in Connecticut. They're different from what we're seeing elsewhere. But what they are is that we expect to see, based on the science, over the next several years, fewer heavy weather events. And so what we're going to see is we're going to see less rain, fewer and far between, but there's going to be more heavier and more intense rain events when that rain does come down. And I think this is not news to anybody. Simply the point that I'm trying to make is that while we need to balance all of the needs and rates and the ability to maintain the infrastructure is one of those needs, we need to be looking forward. And that's one of the reasons why the state went through the trouble of putting together a state water plan. RWA was a party to these conversations. And there was a number of recommendations in there that were to be made at the state, at the government level, private sector, and at the utility level. And as somebody who worked on the state water plan, I hope that you all reference this document on a regular basis. And if you haven't, I think you should take the time to educate yourself on it, because there's a lot of lessons to be learned there. There's a lot of work and taxpayer dollars that have already been put into this and have been committed to this. Iris Kaminsky was on the Water Planning Council Advisory Committee that put this together, so she can speak probably better than I can. But the point being is that there's much more that needs to be done here in terms of long-term water planning than simply saying we have to balance all the needs. We have to make sure that we're able to afford our infrastructure, because at the end of the day, you all provide a very important public service. And furthermore, and I'll conclude with this, is that the whole public the whole public input process is a continuum of which this meeting is a part of. It does not end with your public hearings or your public meetings, your committee meetings, or whatever it may be. I suspect that these type of meetings are probably much better attended than some of the public hearings that you hold on these issues. So I would hope that you all take the suggestions that you hear on this call seriously, take them back with you to your stakeholder and your board meetings, and say, you know, what are we doing about this water plan? What are we doing long-term on water conservation? Thank you. I'm sorry it took so much time.
No, okay, Lou, we represent you, you know, except for Steve Bitko. He's the only person who works for the Water Authority here today. But I know there are other people, and Steve's done a great job of explaining the questions that were put to him tonight, but there are other people who work specifically in some of these other areas at the Water Authority that could address these issues too. So, I mean, we could bring it to them. You certainly could welcome to come to any of the public hearings or any of the public meetings. All of our meetings are public.
So
we review all of these. These things come before the Consumer Affairs Committee all the time. You know, what's the water conservation plan? What's going on at the state legislature? You know,
we understand that. So our function as the Environmental Advisory Council of New Haven is to invite public utility company representatives to meet with us in New Haven, just to discuss specifically issues about New Haven. So that is what this is about. We can't go to every public hearing in the state. It would be impossible. We work on so many issues. I don't know if you saw our agenda, but it is very full. And this is only one issue. It is a very big issue. And I must tell you that we haven't even touched on all the water company issues tonight. I know there are people waiting to speak, but I noticed that the water company is trying to mitigate the issue of less water consumption by buying plumbing companies, lab testing companies, and well servicing companies, which are not core businesses. And now I will be quiet and let Alder Winter speak. Here you go.
I think Lou actually raised most of the points I was going to raise about preparedness for climate change and extreme weather events with increased precipitation. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Kathy?
I was just going to say that although I appreciate the need for the RWA to be covering their fixed costs, despite overall decreases in usage, it seems to me that that would be all the more reason to eliminate large user discount rates. If they want to use that much water, then and you have no control over how much water they use, then they ought to be helping to pay for those fixed costs. And so that question of are the regular ratepayers subsidizing the large, you know, the large users? It sounds like the answer is yes, indeed, we are. And I really...
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that's about it for me. I just really wanted to point that out and maybe to ask Jeffrey to see what your office can do and Stephen to look into the equity that issues that it raised that way.
Well, with all due respect, there seems to be an assumption that we haven't been doing that, and that's wrong. That's wrong. I issue interrogatories to the Water Authority in connection with every rate application, including questions about rate structures. I attend the meetings. I ask questions. I understand. And quite frankly, I had no idea. I was invited to this meeting last week. I had no idea that I was going to be asked about rate structures. No idea. I had no idea what was on the agenda. Nobody communicated to me what I was going to be asked about. So
okay, so you told me you couldn't come, and had you, I did send questions in advance to Steve Vitko, and had you told me you could come, I would happily have shared the questions I shared with him with you. And I think we're entitled to discuss anything we want.
Oh, I understand that, but there's also, you know, that's quite a broad brush. You know, and we'll get you the cost of service information. This meeting's being recorded, right?
Yes.
So we can get a copy of the recording and share it with anybody at the authority that could better answer these questions.
Yes, it will be put on the city website, the audio recording.
That's terrific. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry. We did not mean to put you on the spot. It's
I don't mind being put on the spot, but I don't like the presumption that. You know, when somebody says, hey, you ought to think about this, that's a presumption that we're not, and that's just not accurate.
Okay. So Anstrus asks if the water company could provide information on the number of large users getting discounted rates and the percent of their use, and the number of individual customers, their total use and income from this source. I'm not sure what this source means, but anyway. I don't know if the water company evaluates every large customer separately in setting rates or just has a blanket policy for large customers. Anyway.
This is really something that we're going to have to take to some of the professionals in the company. And as Jeff alluded to earlier, I wasn't aware that, you know, we were going to get into rate structure to this degree as well. We certainly would have had different staff personnel come, you know, being an environmental group, we figured I would be the best representative, which I've tried my best to answer the questions. I know that I've stuttered through a few of them because, you know, they're not my level of expertise, but that said, you know, we didn't know it was going to go this in depth about the rate structure. So, you know, we certainly would have had different personnel if we did know that. The questions that you posed were more towards the environmental ads and the Yale water usage. So we figured it would be more geared towards that, I believe.
Okay, thank you. And I appreciate that. It's hard to know what everybody's questions are in advance, and I apologize for catching you off guard. So,
And Laura, I just want to say, this is Naomi. I just want to say that going forward, if there's any public hearings that are going to be held, I will make sure to reach out to you and invite you if you want to come. I can share the information with you.
Thank you very much. That's very kind of you.
Also, just to piggyback on what Steve had said earlier, we are the consumer board. And what we do is that whenever a resident in the city of New Haven or all of the surrounding other 14 towns have any questions or concerns, once their concerns go to the RWA and they can't resolve it, that's when it comes to our board. And we in turn make sure that we follow through on every single customer complaint. We and if we can't handle it or we can't resolve it, and that's when we always involve Steve, who's our OCA. So we make sure that we don't, you know, misrepresent anybody. We make sure that everybody's represented and treated fairly.
Thank you. We will count on you to keep doing that. And we really appreciate that you do that. All of you. If it doesn't seem like I appreciate you, when water comes out of my tap every time I turn it on, I thank all of you, every single one of you. So yeah. Okay, so the other question I asked Steve Vitko, and then I'll ask anyone else if they have environmental questions, is about the pesticide application reports, because I know you go out and inspect the sites that use pesticides and how make sure they're stored properly. Do you have access to the pesticide application reports?
Yes, certainly. So under Department of Public Health Code 1913B102B, we are required to go out on our watershed lands and inspect the infrastructure for potential environmental or water quality threats to the public water supply. So that said, I know your question alluded to Southern Connecticut State University, Alling Memorial Golf Course, and Yale Golf Course. Southern Connecticut State University and Alling Memorial Golf Course are completely off the watershed, so we have no jurisdiction to go onto those properties. Yale Golf Course, as I said earlier in the discussion, we have met with them. I will state, though, that they have about 720 or so acres in their golf course. Only about 40 acres of the very southern tip intersect with our inactive Lake Malpe watershed. And of this area, much of it is also forested. However, we still provided the environmental inspection per health code. And that said, too, the areas where they store the pesticides in the clubhouse area are completely off the watershed as well. So really, we were honed in on checking what their best management practices were for the areas that are on the watershed area. And I will say that I was very pleased with their best management practices at the golf course. In fact, they did mention that they're trying to stray away as much as possible from pesticides and fertilizers. And they did mention that they were trying to integrate more of a overseeding process instead of pesticide and herbicide use because, one, it's cheaper, and two, it's more sustainable to do that. And I believe that when we were there in 2019, they stated that they did this overseeding process multiple times, and it's proving to be not just more environmentally conscious, but it's also better for the wallet. So I believe they're proceeding to do that in the future.
That is the best news I've had in ages. I worked on a coalition during the last CGA session that helped get the ban on chlorpyrifos on golf courses passed. I was at the Capitol advocating for that bill a couple of times. And I'm glad to hear that the golf courses have taken the UConn research to heart about overseeding working as well or better than pesticides. And thank you for monitoring them. And do you have a report that you wrote after the last time you saw this? Because the Environmental Advisory Council is about to request a public hearing from the city of New Haven on pesticides and artificial turf, and we could really use expert information.
Right. So I only jotted down notes from the day of the event. We're required to submit the day of the inspection and the address to the Department of Public Health. So we have that recorded, but we don't necessarily have the formal notes. My hand jotted notes. The best thing I can do would be to put you in contact with the course. That would be called the course superintendent there. And they could share with you their best management practices. And I believe they also stated that they may have had their own practice manual that could have exceeded DEEP's recommendations. So that's certainly something that you may be able to obtain from them.
I will try. I can't begin to tell you how many times I have asked Yale for their pesticide records and not had them. In April, I went twice to DEEP headquarters in Hartford and searched through box after box of paper records, which were filed in alphabetical order by the last name of the person who submitted them, not by the entity where they were used. So it makes it nearly impossible. And even when you get the records, it doesn't tell you which thing on the list was used when and exactly where. It just tells you what they used for a year on one piece of paper.
Right, right. And as stated before, like I said, the pesticide store, pesticide fertilizer and cart area is off the watershed. So we don't necessarily have jurisdiction to inspect that area. The only thing that's on the watershed is the very southern portion, like I said, around 40 acres. And this area has no storage whatsoever. So it's really just the use at that point that we would be concerned with.
Got it. So I'm just wondering, we have discussed on a prior occasion that Yale was encroaching on water company property with their golf course. I'm wondering if there was monetary compensation involved for the water company with Yale's use of property that didn't belong to them. And if so, was it passed along to the customers?
Yeah, that I would have to look into. I do recall the slight encroachment issue. It wasn't very much, but it was enough for when we were doing our property boundaries to address them. So I don't know what the outcome of that was, but I believe it was maybe 2018 or so. But I could get some information on that and see if anything, what was done in terms of that, the encroachment.
Thank you. So I know we seem like we're coming down very hard on the water issue, but since we've seen all the problems with water all over the world, we are concerned, shall we say, about the future of water in New Haven, especially when the City Plan Commission keeps approving building after building after building, and we want to make sure that there's going to be enough water for everybody who lives here and that we are going to enjoy the wonderful Lake Gillard water that we have been enjoying. So thank you very, very much. And does anybody else involved with water issues have anything else to report or ask about them? Okay, so we will look forward to information. I apologize for our questioning about financial issues. And we do thank you very, very much for helping us understand these issues. We are not, you know, we are trying to educate ourselves and everyone in New Haven about how the water company works for us. So we really, really appreciate that you are here, all of you, to help us understand where the water company fits into our lives and how it makes our life possible. So thank you.
Thank you.
Laura, this is Steve Mongillo. Thanks for having me. I will certainly bring this back to the committee for discussion. And yeah, all of these issues are much more complex. And as Jeff pointed out, these have been addressed multiple times, and long range planning is part of the Regional Water Authority's just method of operation. And all of these issues have and will continue to be considered, considering that water is the most valuable resource.
Yes, thank you very, very much. We appreciate your time, all of you.
Thank you.
Okay. Have we exhausted the water issue? If we have exhausted it, and anybody who, so Steve Vitko and Jeff D'Onofrio and Steve Mongillo, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate Absolutely. Your time.
And thank you.
Hopefully we helped out a little bit.
Okay. Catherine Lamar and Naomi Campbell, we really appreciate your representing New Haven on the water company boards. We trust you, and it's nice to know that we have people we can trust doing our bidding. So, because we certainly can't be everywhere and we don't know everything. So thank you so much.
No, thank you very much for inviting me. Have a great night.
You too.
Have a great rest of your meeting.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye now.
Thanks.
Thanks, Laura. I'll hang around for the rest of the meeting.
Great. We love that you work on all these environmental issues, Catherine. Okay, so I know I didn't go through anything else on the agenda. We didn't have elections. Do we have, we have everyone here but Sochi from the Environmental Advisory Council. What I can tell you is that Kevin McCarthy, our former vice president, left our council. So we need to put new officers in place. And if anybody wants to serve as the chairperson / president in my place, speak now or whenever you want. I'm happy to entertain anybody who wants to work on this is welcome. Okay. I don't hear any callers. I think if it's okay with Doreen and Iris and Florestine and Steve Winter, Kathy Fay, who has been another founding member of the Environmental Advisory Council, would be a great vice president. She helps steer this council and has since before it began and is an expert in so many issues, especially energy, but everything else too. So if you don't mind, I nominate Kathy Fay for vice president. She was serving as the secretary, by the way. Sorry. So
I was just asked for some more. What's the status with the vacancy, various vacancies and changes? Where are you going, Laura?
Where am I going? Well, I'm not going anywhere yet, but when my term is up, I will have served the maximum amount I can serve on this council. And I think it's 2 more years. And so we're trying to nurture future leaders and younger people. That's why we put Sochi Garcia on the council. I guess she couldn't join us this evening, but we do have vacancies. So if you're interested in serving, since you know a lot about these environmental issues, Lou, we would be happy to entertain your application for membership on the council.
Thank you for that. Yes, certainly interested to know more.
Okay, great. So we'll go, sorry, I was a little out of order. Kathy, so I nominate Kathy Fay for vice president. And I guess we should poll the members to see if that's okay with them. Iris, do you approve of Kathy being the vice president?
Yes, I do. I'm really happy Kathy's stepping up. Thank you.
Great. Doreen?
Oh, sorry. Yes, I approve.
Thank you.
Kathy.
Thanks. Florestine?
Yes, I approve.
Thank you.
Without a doubt. Happy for Kathy to become VP.
Thanks. And Alder Steve Winter?
Yes, I also approve. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Well, that makes it unanimous. So, and would any of the other council members be interested in serving as secretary, which is basically a position on paper? We don't do secretarial tasks because it would be impossible to attend meetings at the same time as trying to do other things. Luckily, we have Dawn Henning, who graciously does all our online logistics and probably tries to keep track of what's going on in the meeting at the same time, which is amazing that Dawn is able to multitask like that. But so any of the others of you, I'm guessing Kathy, yes?
Can I nominate someone?
Yes, you may.
I would nominate Iris, okay. Iris Kaminsky to step up as secretary.
Iris, would that be okay with you?
Yes, I accept.
Okay, Iris accepts. So Florestine, is that okay with you if Iris serves? Do you approve Iris as secretary of the council?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Thanks. Doreen, do you approve?
Oh boy, sorry.
It's okay.
Yes. Can you? Great. Oh, yes.
Thank you. Kathy?
Yes.
Thank you. And Alder Steve Winter?
Yes, thanks.
Okay, great. So it is unanimous. I will retain my position. Kathy will serve as vice president and Iris will serve as secretary. Thank you everybody for stepping up. Thank you. I want you to know that a lot of city boards did not continue to meet all during the pandemic. This one did, and you've done amazing work. We have made a lot of progress. We have helped get laws changed. We have helped educate people in New Haven. And I can't thank any of you or all of you enough for everything, all the effort you have gone to make sure that we could continue to meet. It does not go unnoticed. So thank you, thank you, thank you, everybody. Okay, so I don't know if all of you had time to read. Oh, Lou's clapping for us. Great. I don't know if all of you had time to read the updates on stuff I sent to you, but if anybody has any, I tried to update everyone on as much stuff as I could. So if anyone has any questions on any of the information I sent, please let me know. Try to take the hazard mitigation survey. And I hope some of us will go to the Circle of Life public meeting tomorrow. You can go on Zoom. You don't have to show up in Fairhaven. And let's see, we just do not have time to go through all of this. And anyway, it's 10 to 7. So does anyone have anything that's of vital importance that needs to be discussed in the next 10 minutes? Anstris.
Could you, I'm not sure, I joined the meeting late. Did you discuss the item about New Haven omitted from the Connecticut DEP EJ?
No, and thank you for bringing that up. Pat Dillon, Assembly Rep, brought that to my attention. Several of us commented on that in the comments about the shared, what is it, SCEF?
Shared clean energy facilities.
But tell me, does anyone know how we can get the whole city of New Haven back on that list instead of just some census tracts?
Well, I think the thing with the EJ communities is they're not really, the way they're determined is not really based on, right now, is not really based on environmental justice issues. They determine it based on demographic issues that are kept track of by census tract. And so it has to do with income and race and stuff, but it doesn't have to do with proximity to polluted or formerly polluted sites. And of course, I'm not giving you much insight. I'm just kind of giving you like where it came from. Is it's based on distressed municipalities and distressed areas. There are processes happening at the state level to review that and to try and get a little more nuance to that. And I can't exactly connect you with those people right off the top of my head, but I know they're there and that they're working on it. And that came partly out of the Governor's Council on Climate Change efforts.
Okay, so now we're down to one Steve. So I'm just going to call you Steve, and then Giovanni. Maybe you can help us understand what we can do to solve this problem.
I asked Senator Winfield about this, and he said he thought that it had to do with the distressed communities list, and that distressed communities are automatically the entire municipality is included as an environmental justice community, and that that's a formula based designation based on this municipality's tax base, personal income of residents, and it says the website says residents' need for public services. So to Kathy's point, it's like it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, polluted sites or a history of industrial or contaminating uses, which really doesn't make sense at all.
Okay, thanks. Giovanni, what do you say about it?
Yeah, from the city perspective, it's something that we've been actively working with our state delegation on. I've personally talked to at least a couple of the members about it recently. It is, everyone's correct, it's based off of DECD, Department of Economic and Community Development's formula for distressed communities. We are actually a distressed community still because there's a five-year look-back period on the list. But obviously after those 5 years, New Haven would drop off. I think there's a lot of interest to, either to probably fix the determination and the formula going forward, either through, regulatory action on the part of DECD or potentially legislative action. So one thing that isn't clear to me that I haven't checked into yet, but we'll look into, is whether EJ community determination also has the 5-year look back period like the distressed community label does. That's one piece that I'm not sure of right at this minute, but that is something that we're very concerned about. We all know that New Haven has plenty of EJ issues and is very much an EJ community, and I would argue one of the original EJ communities when that term was starting to become a thing in Connecticut. I've been, so many people here in this meeting and other and elsewhere have been leaders on that. So, I think our efforts will pan out here, hopefully.
Great. So I remember overhearing, I think on Election Day, a conversation between Assembly Rep Pat Dillon and Aaron Good. And they said, Aaron said that CJAC, the new deep committee, will be redefining what an EJ community is. And so should the Environmental Advisory Council write a letter, trying to explain what we think defines such a thing? I mean, is there some way we should be helpful to our legislative delegation or to the New Haven representatives to CJAC or to anybody else? If there's a way we can help, tell us and we'll do it. We're great at writing letters.
This is Lou. I think writing letters is always a good exercise, provided you can get everyone to do it, right? So
we would write a letter as the Environmental Advisory Council.
Right. So
we would just write one letter, but we need to know the facts. We need to
Understood. So the first thing I would say is that CJAC is probably not going to change any requirements, but they're probably going to make recommendations to the legislature. I believe that was a concession because there's been folks who've been pushing for this exact thing to, I think, Kathy's point, for a few years now. And that was like a concession that they said, we're going to put together this Environmental Justice Advisory Committee, and they'll make recommendations. So part of the challenge is going to be to get them to make the right recommendation, and the next challenge is going to be to get the legislators to adopt it. I think the best person to talk to that would either be Samantha from the Sierra Club or perhaps somebody from CCAG.
Okay. I find this process is not really kosher, but okay. I guess we're stuck with it. I don't understand. What?
Yeah, it's definitely not conducive to what you would want to see meaningful and timely action on many of these issues that we've been talking about. But that's kind of where they are. So, I mean, I would hope that the Environmental Advisory Council would do a letter in support. I think that would probably help their process along somewhat.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we need to know exactly what we're supporting. And I guess I find it really weird that New Haven got kicked off of the environmental justice communities list. I don't understand that, but that it just boggles my mind that that was, that that happened. And you know what, maybe, I mean, several of us wrote in our public comments about the shared clean energy facilities that New Haven should be on the list of environmental justice communities, but we need to do it as an environmental advisory council, right? But we need to know the facts. So yeah, anybody who can enlighten us about what the exact specifics are, that how we got kicked off, and yes, okay, how New Haven got kicked out, and how, you know, why we should be in, and what exactly we should be advocating for, that would be great. Thank you. Giovanni, if that's you, Steve, if that's you, Lou, if that's you, if you all want to chime in, it's fine with me. I'm happy to hear what everybody thinks.
I mean,
I don't mean now. Sorry.
What? I'd be happy to work with folks between now and the next meeting if there's a smaller group that wants to get together and look into this question.
Okay. So normally we just sort of gather the facts and put them in a letter form without, you know, without doing too many meetings, but I guess we'll,
And I may be able to pull in Sam if perhaps you all want to have a smaller meeting to kind of get some, you know, kind of compare notes and get some fact finding going. Sam might be willing to do, you know, a Zoom conversation or something like that, and let us know exactly what it is that she's advocating for at the CJAC.
Okay. Maybe we should do that. Yeah, go ahead.
Would it be helpful for us to also have some sort of formal contact with the CJAC representatives from New Haven? I don't think we even know who they are, and we probably should. I'm putting this out to everybody and suggesting, I guess, that happen. You know, maybe we invite them to our next meeting. I know we should be doing things on this issue now and not waiting till our next meeting, but maybe we need to establish some lines of communication with them.
Yeah, well, the next Connecticut General Assembly term, it doesn't start till April 10th, but we need to get all the legislation in that we want conveyed to our delegation long before that, but yes.
I don't mean our state reps. I'm sorry, I meant the CJAC reps.
I know what you meant.
Okay. But
our goal is to meet with the CJAC people and to tell them what we want to convey to, yes. So I think Samantha from the Sierra Club, is she one of the New Haven reps to CJAC, Lou?
No, she's one of the advocates.
Natalie? Okay.
What's the name?
I don't know. I don't remember. Aaron told me. Okay.
We can figure it out. I can look into this a little bit tomorrow.
Okay. I'm sure somebody can tell us. Edith Pestana could tell us. Aaron Good was curious as to how people who were not longtime New Haven environmental activists got onto CJAC, but I guess none of us had time to devote to another committee. So, because we've all been working on so many. Anyway, okay. Anstris, yes. We can work together if you want, if the Urban Design League wants to work with the EAC or, you know, whatever. Yeah. And if you want to have a special meeting about this sometime between now and the beginning of November, we can do it. The reason we're not meeting next week is that the first Wednesday in October is Yom Kippur. So we couldn't do it then. Sorry. Oh, so that would be a perfect thing for us to have a smaller meeting just about getting New Haven its proper place on the environmental justice communities list for good and all.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the organizations we all work with, Save the Sound, Conservation Law Foundation, that status is important to the fantastic work they do to the for the communities. So I think they would probably be ready to help too, something like writing a letter once we get all of the facts together.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think there's lots of people that understand that it's seriously important that that status is really understood and formalized and kept that.
I'm a huge fan of giving Save the Sound as much work as we could possibly put on them, to be perfectly blunt. But no, I'm just being a little facetious. I think that's the right move.
Great. Okay. So we will confer about that in the very near future. Anything anybody else thinks needs our immediate attention right this second? I can't think of anything. We do have a lot of updates to read about from the documents. If you see something in the documents that you think we need to address at our next meeting, we've been asked to discuss the rising cost of curbside recycling and at our next meeting. So we will have a discussion about that. And perhaps Sandeep Isola will join us to discuss the loud motor issues and the mobile digital billboard issues and things like that, since he wasn't here with us this evening. Anyway, okay. Well, now it's 7:04. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you for giving up a piece of your evening. Thank you, everybody, for everything you do. And yes, we will save the chat and we will see you soon. But we're going to meet on Zoom again in November, okay? All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.